Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Learner's Corner podcast. My name is Caleb Mason, and I am so grateful that you have decided to spend a few minutes of your day here with me in the Learner's Corner. And today, I am bringing back something that I haven't done in quite a while, but will be more of a frequent thing that shows up on the podcast. And I am going to share with you some of the best things that I am learning from and some of the things that are engaging my imagination and curiosity as well in a library episode. And so what I do in these types of episodes is I just give several different things, and today it's six of different things that I have been enjoying. Could be media wise, could be quotes, could be podcasts, could be movies, music, many, many different things that have just got me thinking or that I've really enjoyed. And then I just kind of give you some of the takeaways and some of the things that it's making me think about as well. And today I have six of them, and we're going to talk about Dune, the three body problem, why your personal best is not sustainable, and music. We're going to talk about an author, and we're going to talk about another quote as well. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, whether or not this is your first time, please subscribe to my Substack, to where I give bunches of different recommendations of some of the best things that I am currently learning from. And again, it's going to be very similar to just what is released today. It's just a wide variety of things. Now, a couple other things I want to let you know about is that two big things here for the podcast. We want to create a safe place to have difficult conversations, to where we have conversations to where we can disagree and learn from each other and disagree respectfully. And we believe that we can learn from anything and from everything, from the trivial to the serious. And we're going to engage both on this podcast today. So with that, let me tell you about item number one, which I'm going to talk about today, and that is the movie Dune 2. Now, I will let you know that for everything that I talk about today, just assume a spoiler warning. I am going to be spoiling things for this. So, you know, either pause and come back, or if you don't mind being spoiled, you can listen to my recap of things, and I will tell you some of the things that it has got me thinking about as well. So with Dune 2, obviously this is a sequel because it's Dune 2 and it's not, you know, just Dune. I guess technically it is Dune Part 2. So this movie is set in space, and there is a galactic struggle that is happening over the planet Arrakis and the spice that is harvested there. And so what happens, and I'm going to try not to get into, you know, to too much spoiler territory, but, or at least, you know, specifics and stuff. And so what happens is that the conflict emerges over this because one house is put over Arrakis and replaces another house. And that house, the Harkonnens are not super thrilled about that because they want to have the power of the spice because they can sell it, they can use it for all of those different things, but they get replaced by House Atreides. And the Harkonnens do not like that very much, and so they take this, they decide to enact a plan to eliminate all of House Atreides so that they can be put in charge of House of the planet Arrakis. And so that's basically what happens in the first movie. Is House Harkonnen eliminates House Atreides, except for Paul Atreides, who is the son. His father is killed, which is, I think, Leo. And his mother, Jessica, also survive. And they are cast out. They are thought to be killed, but they are cast out into the the desert, where they encounter the native people of Arrakis, the Freeman, and they encounter him, and they join up, and Paul and Jessica join up with the Freeman, and that is where the first one ends. Now, the second one is what happens is Paul and Jessica, you know, they join the Freeman and start to adapt to the culture of Arrakis. and they start learning their ways, you know, this is just science fiction right here. They learn to ride these huge, you know, stories high giant sandworms as well in it. And they start to settle in to their new life on planet Arrakis when the Harkonnens come back to planet Arrakis. And, you know, they, or I don't know if they come back, but they've taken it over. And so Paul and Jessica, while all of this is happening, there's been this prophecy that Jessica's people have been building up this rumor, the rumor there, and she's part of this clan called the Bene Gesserit. And I know it could be a little bit confusing. I'll sum it up here shortly, but have been spreading these rumors and this prophecy of this Messiah that is to come and save the Fremen people. And they believe that that person could be her son, Paul Atreides. However, Paul knows that this is something that the Bene Gesserit's created. This isn't actually a real thing. But while he continues to reject that, situations keep happening that pull him closer and closer. And he's getting these visions. And he's realizing that if he goes south, then these visions are going to come true. He is going to be the quote-unquote Messiah for them. And he sees that leading to the deaths of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of Fremen people, and it will lead to galactic war as well. And so he feels all of this pressure, all of this tension in it from wanting to free the Fremen from the Harkonnens, while at the same time not wanting to be the savior of them as well, not wanting that to lead to galactic destructions. But as you can probably, and while at the same time knowing that there's this prophecy that's out there that many people do believe, but he is trying to reject it because he knows that it's not true. And as you can probably guess, situations force him to go south and become that person and sets the path for galactic war. Now, whether or not you were following all of that or not, this is my big takeaway from that, because all throughout the movie, Paul is afraid of what he will become. He's afraid that he's going to bring death and destruction to the Fremen people. And he tries to reject it. But it doesn't last forever. So this is the question that it really made me think about in that movie is, what if I become the very thing or person that I fear? And I don't think any of us are beyond that happening to us. It could be something that happens to us. Hopefully it doesn't. But we're not beyond it. And so it just makes me think of, okay, how do you not become the very thing that you're afraid of? And part of that is doing the internal work of, you know, maybe it's counseling, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's through mentors. I mentioned counseling, you know, already, but through figuring out, or it could be through a genogram and identifying what are some of the things that people in your family have struggled with before. But it's doing the work and also realizing, okay, what do I fear becoming? What am I afraid to become? And analyzing that and trying to figure out, okay, maybe how did this person get to there? And what can I put in place to not be that person? I don't know. It's just something that has really got me thinking. So that's kind of the first thing that Dune is making me think about, is this question of, what if I become the very person that I fear? What if I become the future that I fear? The next thing is this quote that I heard while listening to the Thought Bubble podcast, which is a comics podcast. And one of my favorite comic creators, Kieran Gillen, had this quote on there. He said, your personal best is not sustainable. And what he was talking about in there is, you know, it usually, that sometimes whenever it comes to creating comic books, you know, you can usually put in a pretty good amount of effort and then, you know, get something done fairly quickly. But if you try to do your best, that doesn't always last in the long run, especially whenever you're on a long path. And it really made me think of, it's choosing the marathon over the sprint. Knowing that, okay, I can run this first 10th of a mile or quarter of a mile incredibly fast. But if I do that, I'm going to be dead for the last 3/4 of the mile. I'm going to be dead for the last 9/10 of the mile. And it really made me think of choosing the long run as well. And it made me realize that sometimes it's okay not to give your best. Because ultimately what you're trying to do is you're trying to give your best over the longest period of time. You're trying to give a sustained best, a sustained excellence, and a sustained greatness. You know, it makes me think of, I lived out in Arizona for a while and I interned at a church out there. And one of the things that they talked about whenever they were creating weekend services was, we're trying to shoot for an 8 out of 10. Because we know that if we, you know, go all out and we go for a 10 out of 10, the next week it might be a 5 out of 10, or it might be a 6 out of 10, or it might be a 4 out of 10, or it might be a 7 out of 10. But what we're looking for is that consistency, that consistent greatness. And that quote from Kieran Gillen, your personal best is not sustainable, is what made me think of that as well, is that our best effort, that our personal best is not sustainable. Imagine if someone ran a sprint as fast as they possibly could, and then they were told, hey, you need to run that pace for half of a mile. It probably wouldn't be done. But I just love that quote because it just makes me think that it's choosing the long haul. It's about patience. It's about margin. It's about creating long, sustained greatness and figuring out what needs to go into it to do that. So that's number two. Your personal best is not sustainable, by Kieran Gillen. So the third thing I want to talk about is kind of a couple of things. I've been watching this show called The Three Body Problem, which is on Netflix, which is very good. It's very hard sci-fi. So if you're very much into sci-fi, you might like it. And if you aren't into sci-fi, I don't know if you'll like it or not. But it's really good. And essentially what it's about is these aliens contact the planet and they inform them that they have 400 years before they will arrive there. And are they, these aliens will arrive to Earth in 400 years. And they know that if humans continue at the pace that they are at, that humans will outpace them in terms of their technology, that humans adapt and advance a lot faster than what they do. And they're traveling to Earth when one of the humans involved inadvertently tells them that humans lie. And they didn't know that. You see, they don't lie. These aliens don't lie. They're very plain in what they speak. They aren't as deceptive as humans can be. And so when they learn this, they set out to do things to disrupt humanity's technology so that whenever they arrive in 400 years, they won't be more advanced than them, and that these aliens will be able to take out the human race. Now, it's pretty fascinating. I really enjoyed the TV show a whole lot. There's only one season out so far. And it's a very fascinating thing because it forces you to wrestle. There's some things that are probably a little bit more hit or miss on it. I would say I would probably give, I'd probably give it like a 7.5, but it's pretty interesting, and I like sci-fi stuff, and it's got me intrigued enough that I'm definitely buying, it's based on a book series, so I'm definitely buying the book series and interested to see how things play out in that. Now, one of the, or two of the creators who are part of it were part of doing Game of Thrones as well. And, you know, I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, and he was interviewing both of them, and he drops this little, and one of the creators there drops this nugget that was really fascinating to me. Now, before I tell you the quote, I do want to mention that the creators are David Benioff and Dan Weiss as well. And they worked with Alexander Wu also. Now, I can't remember which one. I think it might have been David Benioff is the one who mentioned this quote. And it's really just a good sight into any story that you consume, any work of fiction. And he says this, because, you know, whenever he was creating Game of Thrones, they would do all these big battle scenes. And this is true of literally almost every action-esque type movie. They'd create these awesome battle scenes. And what they learned is that sometimes they would flop, that they wouldn't get the reaction that they were wanting, or sometimes that they would get the reaction that they were wanting. And they tried to figure out what was going on with that. And he makes this great observation, and he says this: it doesn't matter how big the battle is, if you don't care about the characters, it doesn't matter. That it's not so much about the battle that's happening, it's about what's happening to the characters in the midst of the battle that's going on. And yeah, I love that quote, especially because one of the things that I'm trying to get better at is fictional storytelling analysis, or just even storytelling analysis. And it really just gave me great insight into figuring out some of the best storytelling, and realizing that, okay, it's not always about the fight. Sometimes it's about, okay, what does this fight actually mean? You know, one of the examples that I think of in this is Captain America, the Winter Soldier, does a great example of this, because one of the major things of the plot is that Captain America, Steve Rogers, is in conflict with Hydra, and one of the soldiers who's a part of Hydra is his brainwashed friend, Bucky Barnes. And so part of the conflict while they're fighting is they're friends and they care for each other. And Steve Rogers isn't just trying to win the fight. He's trying to save his friend. And he can't kill his friend. Meanwhile, his brainwashed friend has no problem trying to kill him. And you're rooting for this relationship. You're rooting for this friendship to get saved. And I think that's one of the things that makes this great. That makes great stories. So, three body problem. Recommend. Very fascinating. Makes you think about a lot of good dilemmas in there. And that whenever it comes to action, whenever it comes to plot, whenever it comes to battles, whenever it comes to fights, it's about the character. It's not about the battle. It's not about the fight. Number four, the song Beautiful Things by Benson Boone. Now, I'm not going to sing the song for you, but what this song is about love. It's about being afraid of loss. And it's about what I am referring to as preemptive lament. He's singing about this relationship, about this girl, and he's so thankful for her. And he's thinking about all the beautiful things that are going on in his life. And he starts crying out, and he's saying, please don't remove these beautiful things from my life. Don't take them away. In fact, he sings and says, there's no man as terrified as the man who stands to lose you. And I hope I don't lose you. I hope I don't lose these beautiful things that I got. And it's a great song. I really like the song. The thing that it makes me think about is it makes me sad. It makes me sad whenever I started reading the lyrics, because I think that's going to happen for all of us at some point in our life. Something beautiful is going to get taken away. Something that we love is going to end sooner than what we wanted to. And there is a place for lament for it. And in fact, I think that God wants us to lament that. But I think it's the preemptive lament that I mention that is the thing that bothers me. And obviously, you know, with literally all of these things, I'm super analyzing them. And it's what I'm taking from the art. But what it makes me think about is you're so afraid to lose them that you live in fear and you don't live out of love. And I just know for myself is that I want to be a person of love. I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to be afraid of what will happen or what could happen. And so, yeah. So that is number four. Don't let preemptive lament get in the way of loving today. Okay, number five is I'm just something that has just been interesting me for Brandon Sanderson. Brandon is one of my favorite authors that I'm reading right now. He's a big fantasy author. I've been reading a ton of stuff from him. His work ethic is absolutely incredible. Over the last, I think, two or three years, in addition to all the books that he has already like have planned to release, he will be releasing, or he's already released four like surprise books that weren't planned. They weren't on his schedule. He just decided to write them in his free time. That's just wild to me. Anyway, he's really someone that is, you know, I've been trying to pay more attention to, that I've really enjoyed learning from and, you know, reading all of his books. And so I was reading this article on him from Wired, and it's an interesting read. It's, yeah, but I'll link to it in the show notes. But there's this quote towards the end of it, and he talks about Brandon, and Brandon, you know, is a Mormon. He's part of the Mormon faith. And he has this quote, which I just thought was just so interesting. He says, "As I build books, God builds people." And what that made me think of is that God, as we try to create good in this world, as we are using the skills and the gifts and the strengths that God has given us, these acts of creativity, which everybody could be creative in just many different ways. As we use those gifts, God uses those gifts to, one, build us, to help us continue to grow and develop. And he uses those gifts to grow and develop other people as well, to help us grow, to help us like grow ourselves, to grow other people. And, you know, we experience this all the time. I just don't know if we pay attention to it all the time. If you have taken encouragement or inspiration from a piece of art, from a painting, or from a movie, or from a TV show, or from music, or from a musical, or from even scripture, or a made-up story, or a fairy tale, or a YouTube video, or a building, It could literally be anything. If you have taken it, if you have taken inspiration or encouragement from that, you have experienced that as well. You've experienced this principle that as we build out these works of art, these creations, God builds people, and we just have to give it to him. Now, number six is this quote from Van Lathan, who I love listening to. And Van said this: you can't slow down what people want to do. Meaning, obviously, that if people, quote unquote, people, a group of people, or, you know, the people at large want to do something, it's going to happen. That it doesn't matter how much you regulate it. It doesn't matter how much you try to restrict it. It is going to happen. You can't slow down what people want to do. You can try and put limitations on what people want to do, but you can't fully regulate it. And honestly, what that quote brought to my mind is in Galatians 5. And it's Galatians 5:22 through 23. And in this part, Paul is getting ready to talk about the fruits of the Spirit. But before that, he talks about all of these things that it looks like to not live into the Spirit, but living by the flesh, by living out whatever people want to do with their freedom, but in a negative sense. And that, you know, he talks about things such as idolatry, lustful pleasures, and self-ambition, dissension, division, envy, drunkenness, hostility, quarreling, jealousy, fits of rage, all of these different things in there. And he contrasts it with this in Galatians 5:22. But the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And I love this next part. There is no law against these things. You can't make people love somebody. You can't get them to stop hating somebody. You can't, as you know, Van was saying, you can't slow down what people want to do, whether it's for good or for bad. And I think our responsibility as followers of Jesus is to help model that. Help model the way in that, to create acts of goodness, to create acts of love, to create a more loving world. And that seems very pie in the sky, but and especially whenever a lot of people don't necessarily may not want that. They just want what's best for them. But regardless, you can't slow down what people want to do. So with that, that is the last of my takeaways. I want to recap them real quickly. From Dune, number one, from Dune 2, what if I become the person that I fear? Number two, your personal best is not sustainable. Number three, it doesn't matter how big the battle is, we have to care about the characters in the battle in order for us to care about the battle. Number four, don't let preemptive lament keep you from loving in the present. Number five, as you create God, and as you create and build your works of art, God will build people. And number six, you can't slow down what people want to do. So those are some of my thoughts and reflections on some of the things that I've been thinking about lately. If you want to continue to learn from me, please subscribe to my Substack, where I give recommendations of some of the things that I am currently learning from. And with that, that's all that I have for today. I do want to say thank you to Sam Massey for creating the music for this podcast, and thank you for listening all the way to the end of the episode. My name is Caleb Mason, and until next time, keep learning and keep growing.